certainly is good to be able to stand before you this morning and to do my best to deliver the Word of God in a way that glorifies Him. Thankful to have three of the five elders that this congregation has sitting in here. I would say that that's intimidating, but I've known these men for 10 years, and so it's not intimidating. It's very gratifying that they're in here. I appreciate these guys. We've been in the mission field for 10 years, and these fellows have been right there the whole step from day one till right now. And without them, I wouldn't be able to do what I do in Houma. And so I really appreciate the congregation. I really appreciate these elders for believing in me and believing in the work of, but more than that, believing in the work of the Lord and making sure that that the word is carried out in various places where the funds are not available altogether. But these guys make sure that, and that's, I'm one of about 20 places that they help. So I want you three guys to know that I appreciate you very much. Wayne assigned me the topic, it's more than buildings, bulletins, and budgets. These things are, however, a necessity, at least two of them are, buildings and budgets. I don't guess you have to have a bulletin, but it's easy as in an eldership to center on those three. And if men haven't been trained not to center on those three, then that's what they think the work of an elder is. How much the preacher is going to be paid, what kind of building we have, or this, that, and the other, who puts out the bulletin. And when those three things have been accomplished, then the work of the church is done. My work's done. I can go home and rest because, you know, we got money in the bank. We have people coming with the buildings in good shape, and somebody's putting out a bulletin and people are reading, and so everything's okay. But the Bible doesn't describe our work. And I say our because I've been serving as an elder at Hollywood Road for about 3 years now. And so I know that the work that we do as elders, and can I just have a show of hands of men in here who serve as elders? That's great. That is outstanding. Our work certainly goes way beyond. Actually, the bulletins and the budgets and the buildings are just a means to the end of what we're trying to do. And Bible says, as you sure that you remember, I'll put it that way, as we've been taught in the lectureship, did you remember that the Bible says in Hebrews 13 and verse 17 that we are to watch for the souls of the congregation as we that must give an account of those souls? And so when we as elders step back and look at that charge and that responsibility, that carries an enormous weight of accountability. To know that we are responsible for everything that happens at the local congregation. We can't say, ultimately, that's the preacher's fault, or ultimately, that's the deacon's fault, or ultimately, that's the Bible class teacher's fault. It's our responsibility to know what's going on. It's our responsibility to know who's in those classrooms. Even though we may have a deacon that's in charge of education, we may have a preacher. Some places, preacher may be in charge of that. Ultimately, the buck stops with us, and we can't pass that off. So in order this morning for us to be better equipped, and for the younger men in here who aren't serving as elders yet, to encourage you and try to inspire you and exhort you to serve, we're going to look at a number of principles. And from those principles, we're going to base and talk about some practical things. If anybody knows me, they know that I try to be the practical guy. When I've taught in Memphis as a part-time instructor, I was known as the practical guy. I try to tell the guys what they can look for when they get out of school. And I had a lot of them that say, no, David, those things never happen. And then my phone rings 6 months to a year after they leave school, and they'll say, "Hey, you know what, Brother Jones? Those things happen." And I said, "Yes, sir, because I've been there, and they happen." I think, or no, let's read this real quickly. I'll read it to you. The qualifications of an elder. Just so that we have this as the base of what we're going to talk about, because from the principles that I'm going to bring about, I'm going to relate back to what the Bible says about the qualifications of an elder and how that works. It'd be good to remind ourselves of those things, even though I'm sure that we know them. Paul says in 1 Timothy 3 and verse 1, I'm reading from the New King James, "This is a faithful saying, if a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in subjection with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how can he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest he be lifted up with pride and fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into the reproach and snare of the devil." And we'll come back to some of those. Titus also gives, Paul gives Titus a shorter list in Titus 1 beginning at verse 5. He said, "For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking, and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. For a bishop must be blameless, as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not giving to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able, by sound doctrine, both to exhort and convict those who contradict." So with those things as our basis, go back and think about, and there will be a number of principles, and I don't know how the other two classes, but I've always had this class, that if you have a question or a comment or a disagreement, you feel free to raise your hand, and we'll deal with that, because it's more of a class setting than it is a lecture. I prefer that situation to trying to make you think I know everything. I don't know everything, but I can learn with you. But if I say something you don't understand and don't agree with, you feel free to raise your hand. We'll talk about it. But here we'll start with a list of the things that will help us be more effective leaders. Number one, be a leader, not a victim. I mean by that, don't blame others or look for scapegoats. That's why I started off by saying everything that happens in a congregation ultimately can be laid at the feet of the elders. Now, it may not be their fault, but they are responsible for making sure if something went wrong that it's corrected. But oftentimes, and I say we, because as an elder, we delegate that out to someone else, and sometimes we don't follow up and make sure that those things are being done. We don't check with the preacher if he's got responsibilities in that area, deacon's got responsibilities in that area, and we don't make sure that they do that. And somebody comes back and blames or criticizes what went on, and it was correct criticism, we say, "Well, that's not really our fault. It was so and so's fault." Well, we can't do that. You know, good elders don't do that. Good elders take their responsibility seriously, and they're responsible for what goes on. Also, we take care of important relationships. And I mean by that, we treat others as though they are the most important things. I served under an eldership years ago, and now that I'm almost 64 years old and been doing this for 32 years, I can now say I use some of my illustrations rather than I heard this. But I served under an eldership that had a man who was basically a patriarch. And after being there for a little while and getting my feet on the ground with him, I asked him, just trying to learn, because I never worked. This was the first place I'd ever worked at under an eldership. And I asked him, how do you guys make your decisions? I mean, I just wanted to know, but I wanted to learn. And he said, well, we just decide what the congregation is going to do, and we just tell them. And I said, well, it seems to me it'd be better if you consulted, had a pulse of the congregation. You know, in matters, I'm talking about in matters of expediency, certainly not in matters of doctrine. Nobody has a pulse on that but God, so we can't change that. He said, no, sir, if you do that, then you're letting them make your decisions for you. I said, no, sir, I think, I didn't last there but 2 years, so you know why. I said, in the last 6 months, we were running for our lives. I said, it seems to me like you would want to know what's important to the members. And you would want them to know they're important. That their input is a needed thing. He said, no, sir, you just cause more problems that way. He said, if you just tell them what to do, and they'll do it. And, of course, I'm out there with the people, and I know that didn't work because I had already heard it wasn't working. I was trying to. So I found an old Chinese proverb that said, if you want 1 year's prosperity, grow grain. If you want 10 years prosperity, grow trees. If you want 100 years prosperity, grow people. And so if we concentrate on the people like we ought, and one of our responsibilities is to sit and look at the congregation, pray over it, see their needs, see where they're lacking, and bring them along, to look at young men who we think would be good elders eventually, train them in that fashion. I mean, we're not going to live forever. And we want that passed on down so that when we step down or when we leave this world, that the church where we're shepherding is still on solid ground. And they still have men. What did it say in Titus 1? As he has been taught. To be able to convince the mouth of the gainsayer. So we have to teach them. Well, the only way we can do that is to work with them, to get to know them. Know them on a very personal basis. It's a bad thing and a sad situation when you ask one of the elders about Brother So-and-so and he says, who are you talking about? I don't know him. And there are a lot of congregations like that. Where they don't know the members, they don't even know their names, much less what's important to them, where they are spiritually, what they need to be fed. I mean, our job is to feed the flock, and if we don't know what they need to be fed, you have a crying baby, and you don't know what, when our kids were coming up, and they would cry, I would ask Kathy, why are they crying? And she said, I don't know. I mean, you have to start with if they need a diaper changed, and sometimes it was because they needed to be fed. Well, when members of the church are floundering a little bit, we need to know what they need to be fed. That's how we grow them. And I was telling these two brethren here that where I preach, we have three elders, and the church has been in existence in Houma for about almost 60 years. And the last 50 years, they've always had elders. There's always been a success, a line of elders. There's never been a break in that situation where they didn't have elders. Even though it's a very difficult work in a mission field surrounded by Catholicism and everything else, oil booms and oil recessions and New Orleans and the whole nine yards. Yet, James preaches in the same general area. He understands this, but, that's remarkable. That for 50 years they've had elders. Now, I wouldn't say that they've always had elders that grew people and did what they, based on what I've learned. But certainly that's what we try to do. We try to look at the people and see where they need to be and sit and ponder. You know, we're all of us in our 60s there who are serving as elders, and we look at the young guys that we have. We even look at the teenagers that we have, teenage boys, and we start trying at that age to teach them that to desire to be an elder. We try to grow that. But a lot of elderships don't, I mean, and I'm not bragging on us, I'm just saying that a lot of elderships don't do that. If there's money in the bank, budget. If the building's in good shape, good. If the bulletin's getting put out on a regular basis, we're good. You know, we're good to go. Well, that's not, it's more than just that. Also, we have to live a principle. We have to live our lives with integrity. Live and lead in an honest and righteous way, and be true to God's word and be true to our word. There's nothing that hurts a congregation more or discourages a congregation more than if the elders don't lead with integrity and live with integrity. Are we perfect? No. But are we supposed to be blameless? Well, if to be an elder, we have to be blameless. That doesn't mean we have to be perfect. It just means that we, whatever we've done that we haven't, shouldn't have done or left undone, the good thing, we corrected that and we're moving on. We live with integrity. Also, we need to have a dream or vision, is a better word, that will leave the church in a better place than when we became an elder. Here's a quote. Is there anything worse than being blind? Yes, the most pathetic person in the whole world is someone who has sight but has no vision. Helen Keller said that. It's a sad thing when we can see physically, but we have no vision spiritually. Where are we going to be 5 years from now? Where are we going to be 10 years from now? Now that starts with David, individually. What kind of elder am I going to be 5 years from now? That is, all that is depending on if the Lord wills and time continues. Am I improving myself? Am I making myself a better person? Am I making myself a better leader? Am I doing what God wants me to do? If I am, and if all the other guys are, then we're going to try to leave the church in a better situation when we have to depart this life than when we found it. We need, that vision needs to be a large vision. Instead of just looking at the budget and the bulletins and the building, we need to look around at the community, and then at the state, and then at the world. Sometimes we don't have those visions. Sometimes we don't have those thinkings. Also, another principle is know what our strengths are. Know what our strengths are. The wisdom of God is seen in the fact that He organized the church in such a way as to have a plural eldership, where you bring at least two men together, preferably at least three, but even at two, because one man's going to have a strength in one area where this other guy doesn't have that same strength. We have, like, the three of us. One of our elders is named Randy. He dealt in the financial world when he was had his regular job for years and years and years. He's very good in dealing with insurance companies. He's very good in dealing with matters of legality. He know you can go to Randy and you can ask, and so he has that strength about him. Herb is a man who has been a person who's worked in the public eye all of his life. He's a very much more people person than Randy is. And, you know, I try to bring my strength, my energy from the scriptures and from people and these. So when we put all of our strengths together, then we hope, we prayerfully have a strong eldership, because each of us has different talents and different traits and different personalities. But at the same time, when it's not just me or Randy or just Herb, it's all three of us. And when you put all that together, and you do it God's way, then God's going to bless you, and you're going to have that strength. And where the weaknesses are in each of us, we need to work on those. You know, we need to, if I'm not, if one of them's not necessarily a people person, which he should be, to be even appointed as an elder, but he needs to work on that. But we need to know our strengths. And then by knowing our strengths, then we'll know our weaknesses. And where our weaknesses are, we need to shore that up best we can. So the eldership can get stronger and stronger over the years. Also, in keeping with the qualifications of an elder, we need to strive for excellence. The people that we shepherd will rise to no higher standard of excellence than they observe in us. They will not excel any higher than they see us excel, because we're their leaders, we're their elders. And if we're just maintaining status quo and keeping house, that's all they're going to do, because they don't see a challenge. They don't see somebody in the congregation, and especially when we talk about elders, they don't see the elders making the effort to be better. They don't see the elders making an effort to be challenged. They don't see the elders making an effort to step out of their comfort zone. They don't see the elders out front saying, come on, you know, not pushing them to do something, but saying, come on with us. We're you know, this is where we're going. We need to strive for that excellence. Also, we need to be willing as an eldership to stand alone if need be. If you served as an elder for more than one day in your life, you know it can be a very lonely situation. Because in matters of expediency, the eldership is, I compare it to like an umpire or a referee at a football game, baseball game. When that umpire makes a call in a baseball game, immediately he has made, if it's a 50-50 crowd, half the folks mad at him right there. You're not going to make a call, and referee's not going to make a call in football. It's going to please both sides. Both sides say, "Well, my boy was holding. That's good." No, they're not. You know, they're going to argue and run him down the sideline and vehemently argue that he didn't hold. And the other guy's going to holler if he didn't call it, he was holding. Well, when we have to make those choices for the congregation, taking everybody's talents in consideration, everybody's interest in consideration on matters of expediency, we have to stand there and make that call. And this is what we need to do. We think is to lead the church in the right way. There are going to be those who don't like that. And sometimes we can feel like we're just standing all alone because, we that's our job. It stops there with us. We have to do that. And in line with that, we need to be ready for resistance. I think, maybe it is a case that's why so many men choose not to serve in the eldership, because of the resistance. You know, they don't want to make someone mad. They don't want this side to be mad at them. They don't want this person. And I haven't enjoyed the last 34 years of having people mad at me. But it's been that way. I mean, and I hear you chuckling, so I know you know it's that way. I mean, whether you're a preacher, and even as a Christian, and I don't like to use the word regular Christian, but just a Christian who doesn't have the role as a preacher or an elder. You live right in the world, what, you're going to have resistance. But it's sad and very discouraging when that resistance sometimes comes from brethren in the church who know better. But you have to be ready. Brother Renshaw used to teach us in preaching school back in the day, if you can't stand the heat, then get out of the kitchen. I mean, it's there. It's part of the work. It's going to be there. And when we think it's not fair, we need to really keep our eyes on the Lord, because He was the perfect person. My father-in-law is not a Christian. I love that man. We've been married. This is Kathy and I have been married 46 years here in a couple of months. And 46 years, we've never had a cross word, my father-in-law and I. And I could call him right now. And Tim knows my father-in-law. And he said, "Son, the perfect man lived, and they put him on a cross. So what do you expect your brethren to do for you?" He said, his own put him on a cross. What are they going to do for you? You know, you have to be ready. It shouldn't be that way. And not everybody does that way, but there are those. And we have a tendency sometimes as elders to curl up a little bit and concentrate on those who do that rather than the majority of them who appreciate what we do and who are supporting us. We need to be ready to face the resistance, but also be ready to understand it doesn't come from everybody. And so concentrate on the positive and let that encourage us to deal with the other. Set an example for the brethren. I'm going to read 1 Peter chapter 5, the first four verses. Peter said, "The elders who are among you I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly, not as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away." If we want brethren to be excited about evangelism, starts with us. If we want brethren to be concerned about those who are wayward, it starts with us. If we want brethren to be excited about the Bible class program, it starts with us. If we want brethren to be concerned about the benevolent needs of the community, it starts with us. They're looking to us. Like I said at the beginning, we don't push people. We lead them. We tell them to come on. You know, we're gonna hold your hand and we're gonna walk with you and we're gonna lead you that way. Also remember, leadership is behavior. It's not just a position. You know, there are fellows who want to get in leadership because they can be the boss. I don't see my brother in here, my spiritual brother. So we had an elder there, and he had served for 40 years. And doctrinally, he kept the church, and he probably is the reason why the church stayed on the doctrinal side straight. He was right down the line on that. But his wife passed several years ago, and he did not want to step down as an elder. Because he said, "I can't make any more decisions. I won't have any more authority." You know, it wasn't about, "I won't be able to help people as an elder grow spiritually. I won't help people get to heaven. It's, I won't be able to say what's going to happen around here." It's sad when you, and that's, again, that's the idea of the strength situation. If you have a fellow like that in there, but he's doctrinally sound and he's going to make sure doctrine stays good, stays straight, then the other guys hopefully can overcome some of that attitude of being like not a Diotrephes necessarily, but being self-willed. But anyway, it's not behavior. I mean, leadership is not a position that we occupy as much as it is who we are as a person, how we live. You know, you select men, hopefully we select men out of congregations that are already exhibiting those attitudes of leadership. Not because this guy knows how to make a lot of money, although money is a necessary thing. Not because this guy can pull strings for somewhere, and if they're unethical strings, they don't need to be pulled. But men who have a vision for the Lord that says, the church needs to go in this direction. I want to help the church to go this direction. I want to help the brethren grow. I want to help the lost be saved. I want to help the wayward to come back. It's not a position. It's not once we get there and we say, okay, now I'm on top of the heap and I can do what I want to do and nobody can tell me what I can do. And that was the brother way back there, where I served. He didn't like anybody having any influence on him and his decisions. It was all about him, what he wanted. And like I said, we weren't there a long time. But I learned a valuable lesson not to be like that. And I learned how it is that if I ever get in a position where I'm an elder and not a preacher, I learned how not to treat a preacher, because that was a very rough way that we were treated. And I'm really surprised through that ordeal that my son and my daughter, Wayne is a preacher, and Shelly married a good preacher. So I'm proud of them for being able to. And Kathy was so instrumental in the family of helping them to understand, look, this is not the way everybody treats preachers, you know. And we didn't push them that way, but they went that way, and I thank God for that. Also understand this, that leading means, or being an elder means, that we make an impact in people's lives. And that can be for good, or that can be for bad. But we make an impact on people. Little children look up to the elders. Little children watch the elders. Their parents watch the elders. And we need to understand that our role is to make that impact in that person's life for the glory of God, to teach them to glorify God. And we do that, and maybe we incorporate some of these other things we said, in the fact that we can be servants as examples. When I moved to Houma, or the first Sunday I was in Houma to preach, to see, look at the work and all, we had a potluck lunch after services, and the one thing that impressed me the most was that Brother Herb got up, one of the elders, during like the last third of the meal, and got the garbage can that was on wheels, and Herb went around and was cleaning the tables off. And I said, you know, if there's an elder here who serves like that, this probably would be a pretty good place to be. I mean, just that impact that he made on me, that here's a man who's not too good to clean tables as an elder. He could have said, hey, how about somebody doing this? But Herb jumped up and did it himself. And I'm sort of that kind of person, and I thought, man, I could probably get along with this guy. He thinks the same way. But we make an impact, and we may not know that. We may not realize that. When I was preaching back in Mississippi, I wasn't serving as an elder, and the casinos had just been voted in Tunica County. And he had to have a boat. On that day, he had to have a boat in the water. Do you have casinos in Texas? Oh, man. Come to Louisiana. If a man owns a business by himself, I mean, you know, privately owned, you're going to have gambling stuff in the room that says 21 or older only. But anyway, this Splash Casino came to Tunica. And it was a violent storm coming, and I was in the post office, and the postmaster was a young lady who likes to play golf, and I'd go down, and I didn't know behind the wall that there was this young lady. And so Patty said, I hope that storm doesn't wash away those boats down there. And I said, I hope they wash them out to the Gulf of Mexico. And she said, what about the folks on there, David? I said, well, this is what I said. Now, I'm not proud of it, but it's what I said. I said, if they're dumb enough to be on there, they can float out there with them. And I didn't know. Well, there was a girl back there who was the sister-in-law of one of our members. And she called her sister-in-law and said, you know what your preacher said? And so she told her. Well, the girl comes to me and says, did you say that? And I said, yes, I did. Well, I realized then that probably wasn't the best thing to say. That girl was offended by that. And she wasn't a Christian. And, I mean, while that's how I felt, probably wasn't the best thing to say. But I made an impact on her, but not for good. But we eventually baptized her. I went and apologized to her and sat down and studied the Bible with her, and we were able to baptize her. But we make an impact. We may not realize it. As an elder, we may be standing in a group of men and something comes up and we just come off of something off the top of our head that is, you know, kind of pointed, And there may be a weak member or a non-member standing there. And that impact on that person could affect that person's soul eternally. So we as elders make an impact one way or the other. We not think so when you get all the criticisms and all the gripes, but we're making an impact. And we need to remember that in our walk, everything that we do.
Judah, can I add something there?
Yes, sir.
You were talking about Wayne and Shelley. The elders impact the preacher's children. Having grown up in the preacher's family, and you're having the preacher's family, I don't know that elders are always cognizant that what they say to a preacher, even if it's not carried home verbally, the way that preacher is, you know, going to either have his confidence bolstered or he's going to be weakened. Children see that. You know, they're very perceptive.
They are. They are, and other members are as well. And if that gets out or it was done publicly, like I have been in situations where it was where an elder raked me over the coals publicly about something he didn't agree with me on, then it has an impact on other people. You know, there were several in that same situation. This fellow hated to study the Old Testament. This elder up in long ago, I mean, those were his words. I hate to study the Old Testament. He told me, I wish they had all burned up at the cross. And I said, and this is an elder. They've been an elder for 20 plus years. But I said, well, if they needed to have been burned up, I'm sure God would have taken care of that at the cross, you know, when it happened. And he said, so when it all came down, we had the meeting and he was really going after me. And he said, this boy right here, he knows I hate the Old Testament and that's why he preaches out of it. And I said, brother, I preach out of the Old Testament because it was inspired by God, and the New Testament tells me it's my example, and this, that, and the other. You know, same thing you would say. I'm not even especially any different than you. But that had an impact on those guys standing around. They it discouraged, and there were several people who left the congregation based on his attitude. So, and we also started a visitation program just to show you the impact. We started a visitation program. And we sent everybody out first to visit those who were wayward, who used to be members there. And this one great deacon, young guy, came back to me after about four visits and he said, Brother Jones, I need to talk to you. I said, okay. He said, I've been out and visited all those folks you asked me to. And to a person, every one of them left because of this guy. And I said, I was afraid that's what you were going to find out. And he said, and they all told me, and when he died, they might come back. That was the impact that he had. He didn't care about the impact because it wasn't a behavior to him, it was a position. So we as elders need, and the devil, that, I believe that would be exactly what Paul was talking about in 1 Timothy 3:6 about, although he wasn't a novice, but he was lifted up with pride. And so he got to the point that he thought he was, infallible. So that wasn't a good situation, but we learned from that, and I learned not to be that kind of person, and hopefully I'll never be that kind of person. If I am, I hope somebody snatches me in the back. Well, I used to say in the nap of my head, but neck, but I don't have any hair anymore, so I guess I can grab my shirt or whatever. Let's move on, sir. What time we stopped? 10 after?
Like a minute ago.
No. A minute or so. Man. All right, we're going to use that last minute. I'm going to be like, I want to say this. Of all the things, unity is where the strength is. In an eldership and in a congregation. In Nehemiah chapter 3, I wouldn't have given those personal illustrations if I'd have known we'd run out of time. Just take Nehemiah chapter 3 and you read down through there about Nehemiah and how he had gone over, searched out the land, searched out the problem, met with the people. We can do it. God said we could. And when you look at chapter 3,
and it describes the work that they did as a group. Look at the way each one of the verses begins. Verse 2 starts off, next to this guy was this guy. Next to him was this guy. The sons built this. They laid their beams. Next to them was this guy. In verse 5, next to these people. The nobles didn't help, but the people were working. Next to them, this person. Next to them, all the way through the whole chapter. That's the way it ends. Talks about people working side by side. Each person doing his work. That's where the strength of a congregation is. And this congregation is a great example of that. And that's where the strength in an eldership is. Is elders standing shoulder to shoulder doing the work together in unity. And you know what the Bible says about the walls. They were built in 52 days. Why? People had a mind to work. If we're going to build up the church, then we have to have the mind to work. And it starts with us as elders. If we're not willing to do the work, then we don't need to be elders. And if we are elders, then we need to encourage and bring other people along with the work. Well, I appreciate your time. I appreciate your attendance, your attention, and I'm sorry that I went overtime. I didn't know that we were getting that way. I didn't have it about 20 more principles that we needed to go over, but that's all.